Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. What's in a name? Plenty if you're daring. Letitia Daring, my guest today. Letitia is a New Yorker with talent, tenacity, creativity, and drive. Her professional background is in retail with more than 22 years in the business. That background certainly impacted her personal life. Letitia and her husband met when they opened the first Old Navy store in New York in 1997. She was his boss and admits having quite a crush on him. That collaboration led to Pieces, a Brooklyn boutique that opened 3 years later and became a destination for hard-to-find labels, trendy brands, and independent designers. It caught Vogue's eye. The magazine did a one-page article about the couple running that retail store. In fact, the larger-than-life Andre Leon Talley came to Brooklyn to interview them. Pieces closed its doors in 2010, but a year before, Letitia began working on the clothing line Ashton, named after her little girl who was born in 2005. But that's not the end of this introduction. That's because Letitia Daring is also the force behind the Ladies Who Lunch, an organization that brings together accomplished women of various industries who share their stories and hopefully empower and inspire others. So, let's begin our empowering and inspiring conversation. Welcome, Letitia.
Thank you, Sandy. So happy to be here.
So now, the first thing I want to know is, what was a catalyst for creating Ladies Who Lunch, and how were you able to pull it off?
I think one of the best parts about my Pieces experience was just the conversations that happened within those four walls. I would have, you know, clients from all over come in, and we would just have these amazing conversations. And the number one topic was, how did you get started, you know, and followed by tons of questions in regards to, you know, just making the right decisions to go into business for yourself, and what are your resources, and how did you make the financial aspect of things happen? And so, you know, as I closed the store, obviously being very emotional about closing the doors after such a great run, it was that moment of reflection. Like, how can I give back? How can I share my story with a larger audience of women who, you know, we all know we have these great ideas, these great concepts, but it's the actions behind these great ideas that really spearhead small businesses, especially in America at large. So hold on.
Mm-hmm. How did you start Pieces? I was going to do that later, but let's do that now. Did you study retail in school? Mm-hmm. Did you just always know that was something you wanted to do?
I definitely am what you call a retail baby. I've loved just working in the professional field of retail for a very long time. And when I was just a sales associate in high school working part-time, it was always my dream to be a manager. You know, that was the extent of my dream back then. And obviously, being in retail for various years, I eventually became a manager, and I loved what I did. It wasn't so much just the fashion, it was the people aspect of it as well. And so I got to a point in my career where I kind of plateaued and I wanted more. And I wanted more in an intimate way. I wanted more where I could truly make a difference in individuals' lives, not so much just carrying out the orders of a larger corporation. And so I started doing these shopping parties for my girlfriends. I told them that I would only come if they had 8 to 10 friends that they could invite. I would provide the food. I actually have an aunt who has a retail store in Atlanta, and she's had it for over 20 years. And I used to go to the buying shows with her all the time. So I developed these relationships with different designers. So when I told them I wanted to just buy on a smaller scale, they were extremely supportive and allowed me to do so. And so I took this little bunch of merchandise, a very eclectic mix of things, and I hosted these shopping parties in the living rooms of my girlfriends.
So they were trunk shows.
Yes, yes. And they just got really huge. I had clients in every borough, and I was doing it on my 2 days off a week. And it became, you know, this thing that I actually loved more than work. And so I came home one night, or I was driving home one night from a shopping party in the Bronx, actually. And I drove down Vanderbilt Avenue, and I stopped at the stoplight, and I looked to my left, and there was this illuminated space on the corner. And I go, oh, my God. That could be mine. That could be my store. And that really was the beginning of even the thought process of opening a store.
And that was in a section of Brooklyn, I believe, called what?
Prospect Heights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I went home that night and I was so excited. And I told my husband, hey, let's open a store. And he goes,
let's put on a play.
Exactly. He goes, you're crazy. We need to plan for that financially.
Well,
we
what
can't
was he
do
doing
it.
At the time?
He was still working at Old Navy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, we went to sleep that night and I couldn't get it off my mind, obviously. You know, that was, I guess, my first bite of just being an entrepreneur and truly opening a brick and mortar. And so, you know, he allowed me to continue to talk him to death about it. I put my ideas to paper and I just decided one day that I really wanted to do it. I was extremely unhappy at work. At this point, I was working for Kenneth Cole.
Oh.
And I was extremely unhappy and I just really wanted to take a try at it. And so he told me, if you are so miserable and you want to quit, I will support you if you really want to do it. And
did he mean that financially and spiritually?
Yeah. My husband is honestly, like, I don't know that I could do all the things that I do if he weren't so supportive. You know, to just have someone behind you that truly believes in you is great. And so he supported me financially, supported me emotionally. I went after this space, tried to get information about the landlord that took a long time because they didn't have a for rent sign in the window. There was no for rent sign. So I finally tracked down the landlord and it took us 6 months to occupy the space. Tons of interviews, tons of business planning, and we finally got the space. And of course, then the fear settled in because I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, the reality, you know? Yes.
Where is the money going to come from?
Sure.
I actually didn't have any financial backing. I took my 401k that I'd worked all the years for, and I just dumped that into the business. And, you know, throughout the 10 years of Pieces, I actually survived that way, never took taking out a loan or anything like that. Obviously, it was a different day and age, and we were very unique in that era for
because
what we
why?
Were offering. For what we were offering, it was definitely a higher-end scale of aesthetic for a retail store in Brooklyn. There really wasn't anything like us. I mean, this was before there was a Barney's. This is before, you know, there were so many boutiques. And actually, the space that we occupied historically was an old Matty Rich retail store called, you remember the movie Crooklyn?
Spike Lee.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, good.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. So that space, historically, from a retail perspective, is attached to Matty Rich and that whole story of Crooklyn. And so it had history, but no one really, you know, when we were painting our awning, I'll never forget, there were people in the neighborhood that would walk by and they were like, what are you guys going to open? And, you know, my husband and I proudly said, we're opening a clothing store. And they bust out laughing like, OK, hope, you know, it lasts. Good luck.
You mean you had a greater chance of having a pizzeria be successful?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one really understood what we were trying to deliver. But when we opened our doors, it was incredible.
Was the neighborhood mixed back then?
The neighborhood was very mixed.
So you were expecting your clientele to come from everywhere?
Everywhere.
White, black, purple, Hispanic, whatever.
I really expected to get the support of all the clients that I had built through doing my shopping parties initially. Of course, all my friends and family. But then also just being able to identify with the fact that I was a Brooklyn girl who loved fashion and I couldn't shop in my borough. Huh. And so there was a huge opportunity at that point in time to have something, a resource that you, a girl like myself, could just run to and get something for whatever event she had going on. That was the original premise for Pieces. It then developed into, you know, just tons of support from the neighborhood, a lot of upset male clients that were like, when are you? Because we originally opened as just a women's boutique. And then we responded to the call to start doing menswear as well. But we also were very big for supporting local designers. And that was something that didn't really happen in that neighborhood. It was more about people going into the city to go shopping. Mm-hmm. It really was. And at that point, I think there were a lot more renters in the neighborhood as well. The rents were much lower. So people had a little bit more disposable income to shop in their neighborhood and support local stores. And like you said, it was a lot more diverse. So our clientele grew over the years. And we were just able to support these local designers by highlighting what they were doing at the time, truly believing in them, mentoring them, giving them advice of how to build their brand in the industry, because we had our ear to the street and we were very, my husband and I both were very passionate about what we were doing. So there were tons of designers that truly supported us and appreciated the fact that they had a resource that they could rely on, that they could say, I want to create this t-shirt brand and I'm going to take it to Pieces because hopefully they'll like it and they'll buy my t-shirts.
And how long did it take you before you turned a profit?
It took us about 5 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And he was still working at...
Colin stopped working probably about 3 years in. But we saved. And, you know, the store was making enough money to sustain itself. It just wasn't making a profit at that point. And thank God the rent was incredible. So we were able to break even and then, you know, build it with his help, obviously not working anymore with his help. I mean, all of the construction, the build out, my husband did. So I never had to outsource any of that, which was a huge win for us.
Sure.
I mean, the store, the space was a salon before we got it. So there was tons of work to be done. And so I saved a lot with that initially.
Did the visit by Vogue kind of push you over or up to the top? Or?
That was surreal.
Yeah, and probably so
That
huge.
Was so huge for me. I mean, I was the little girl that used to watch fashion shows with my mom and, you know, always emulate these runway models walking down the catwalk and who Andre Leon Talley was, you know, just being at that level and being an African-American male, you know, being a gay male and just being able to have him step foot into my store. I mean, he was it back then. And I really pinched myself several times because I could not believe that it happened. And, you know, that story actually took place through support of one of my clients. One of my clients was really good friends with him, and she shopped in our store all the time, and she loved us. So, I mean, we've been to her house for dinners and parties, and she owned one of the brownstones in the neighborhood, and she made that happen for us. It was a huge turning point. I mean, that's when we started getting national recognition. We had people traveling from different states, even different countries, coming to see the store when they saw that story. So I think that heightened our visibility outside of Brooklyn.
So you're doing well after 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's a labor of love. You really like it. And then all of a sudden, we come to a screeching halt in 2010 because...
So many things happen in the neighborhood.
That were out of your control?
Yes. Gentrification, in many instances, is a great thing. Just when you love where you live and you see the investment going into your neighborhood. But it is such a bad thing for small business because unless you have a huge amount of money to float you while your rents quadruple and your clients can't afford to live in the neighborhood anymore, so you have to have the money to continue to reinvest in marketing and building a new clientele constantly, it's hard to survive. Overall, I would say that neighborhood, I mean, there's Barclays Center, 2-3 blocks away now, that wasn't there before. I remember there used to be crackheads that would knock on my glass and beg for money every single day. You know, that's when we opened. That's when we existed. And now, you know, you can't even afford to rent an apartment in that neighborhood. So one of the things that I look back on that I regret, I don't regret anything but not purchasing that space. Because had I owned it, I would still be there. And unfortunately, we didn't have the time to really consider the financial aspect of that. It was, we just want to keep our business going, not can we really afford to take this huge leap? You know, even though the business was doing well, that amount of monthly investment in just rent was detrimental to us, honestly. I mean, we kept it going for a couple of years, but there were so many things that we had to do creatively to just have that additional funding.
So you saw the writing on the wall.
Absolutely.
And you knew you better cut your losses, literally and figuratively.
Absolutely.
So then comes this clothing line named for your daughter, Ashton. You designed clothes before, or did you just say, I think I'm going to design clothes? And if that's in fact the case, isn't that nuts?
Everything I do is nuts.
Okay.
Let's chalk it up to that. I mean, I am definitely what you would call a quintessential risk taker. I believe.
How about ballsy?
Yeah. And I'm a dreamer. I really am. And it's one of those things that I can't stop my brain from just creating these visions. And I love to travel as well. And right when I had my daughter, it was, okay, so what is my legacy going to be? Because when you give birth to another being, it is about what are you going to leave behind for them? And that building process starts, whether it starts in your mind or whether it starts physically, whether you're into real estate or whatever it is, it's about what is your legacy going to be? And even though we had pieces, I thought, okay, there has to be another layer to this because at that point I was having thoughts about obviously closing the store, moving on with my life because being your own boss is also, you know, it keeps you in a box as well. I ran the store every day. I had to be there every day, even though I had employees. As you get older, you want to experience life a little bit more as well. So I decided that I'd been dressing women for so many years, for the most important moments in their life to the most casual moments in their life. I know what women like. I know how they like their clothes to fit. And even though I'm not formally trained, I definitely thought I had seen enough in my life and had enough vision to put a line together. So I actually packed my bags and went to China for 8 days and visited mills and factories. And
by yourself?
By myself. And, well, with these friends that I had that actually connected me to some resources in China. So I wasn't with strangers, but it was the first time that I actually had met these people, but they took care of me, you know, translated for me and all of that. But that was my first stab at doing it, you know, officially. And it was such an incredible experience for me. I learned a lot, and I was able to really get the confidence that I needed to do what I do now.
Oy. So you came back, you knew where you were going to have your clothes made,
mm-hmm.
and you got a space.
Well, I actually, that Pieces wasn't closed yet.
Oh,
so
okay.
We actually did Fashion Night Out. We did this huge art installation. We invited hundreds of our clients. And that's where when I officially launched the line in the store.
And that was in what year?
Oof. 2009.
2009.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also at that point that you did see the writing on the wall,
yes.
of that piece, is that you
yes.
knew that it was eventually, you were literally going to close
yes.
its doors.
Yes.
So the same way you started Pieces, you started this fashion design
mm-hmm.
with money that you had saved and had your clothing made
mm-hmm.
in China. And Ashton is still alive and well.
It's sold online, but I also have one retailer that sells our line very successfully in Atlanta. And we're working on building that, obviously, to get into more stores, to do business on a wholesale level. But I love dealing directly with my clients. So the website is actually operated and owned by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I personally pack and ship all the merchandise myself.
Out of where? Your home?
Out of my home. Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened to Colin? Is he there boxing and packing also?
He will actually take the boxes to the post office for me. He will do that.
But he's working somewhere.
He's working, yes. Mm-hmm.
So take me to the ladies who lunch.
Okay. I actually, after having that emotional breakdown of just closing my doors and saying, okay, Letitia, you're going to walk away from this, you know, which was huge for me, I decided to just take a year and just really think about what my next steps were going to be. What was I going to do? And how was I going to make another impact? And when I say impact, a greater impact, I thought something that was going to be a lot more substantial than just the aesthetic. And so I'm very spiritual and very, you know, believe a lot in faith, which is why I think I've been able to have such an incredible journey. But I prayed on it. You know, and I had my conversation with God and I said, okay, what is going to be next? Because I know that you didn't give me this incredible story to just have given it to me and there's nothing to come of it. And so I prayed on it. And when I woke up the next morning, there was this thought on my heart, honestly, to just have this intimate conversation, to just bring women together. And didn't know how I was going to do it, didn't know how huge it was going to become, but it started with a conversation. How do you just sit down and have dialogue with other women of like mind that want to do something but don't know where to begin? Different women that are at different stages of their, you know, honestly, their faith, their drive, their ambition, but also just not knowing what they want to do or how they want to do it. And so I launched Ladies Who Lunch actually in 2010 when we did our first event here at Robert De Niro's restaurant, Tribeca Grill Loft. And I had over 150 women show up. And we started it very intimately in 2010. And
who'd you contact? Just people who you knew?
Yeah, just women, just incredible women that I've met that have inspired me along my journey that I thought really had a viable story to tell. So it wasn't just about me. It was about me and my friends, all these incredible women that are in different industries doing different things that have a story to tell.
You knew all 100 who you invited?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, Pieces, I had over 4,000 clients in my database. And then, of course, those women always have friends.
And so on. Right.
So it was a great platform to launch Ladies Who Lunch, actually. And I didn't even truly understand the volatility of that until I was standing in front of that room. And I...
Or certainly the potency of that.
Yeah. I literally was so moved by the level of support And women that just said, we just wanted to make sure you were okay because we can't come see you anymore at Pieces. And we just wanted to make sure that, you know, whatever you do, that we're going to be here to support you. And I just thought that was such an incredible thing. I mean, that day we cried, we laughed. It was such an amazing day of sharing just my story and my journey, sharing things that they didn't actually know about me, but then allowing these other women to share their journeys as well.
So it wasn't very structured.
Right.
People just ate and talked.
Exactly.
And made matches, made
exactly.
connections.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happened?
So then we decided to keep it going.
Who's we?
Well, it was myself, and I had a couple of friends that were helping me. Now I have an official board, but back then there was no official board. It was Leticia.
So everybody paid their own way.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And it just developed into this organization that we know today that, you know, this year we just literally took Ladies Who Lunch National, which was huge. And again, just another conversation with God. Like, okay, I can't keep doing this in New York because I know that there are women other places and other cities and other states that can truly benefit from this conversation, if you will. And the level of support in these other states were incredible. I had women this year. This year, we could have had over 300 women. We couldn't because the space wouldn't hold
it. You mean at every event?
Well, in the New York event, because
okay.
we always start with our New York event. So this year we started in New York and we literally had 160 women that we could actually seat and over 150 women on our wait list
wow.
that we couldn't fit into the space. And I was floored. I had women that drove from D.C., New Jersey, Connecticut, that just heard about the organization and wanted to just be in the room. And so we decided to, now my official board, we decided that we needed to take it on the road. We needed to go to D.C. We needed to go to Atlanta. You know, there were women in Chicago that we want to just build this very strong alliance of women in small business. You know, I think that there are tons of organizations out there. But I think we appeal a little bit more to the emotional side of what it is to be a small business owner today. And I think we're a lot more viable in that the conversation changes. It changes every market we go to. It changes every year we do it because there are different things that affect women in small business. And there's tons of resources that, for lack of a better term, some women don't like to share, you know, especially if it's their best kept secret. We're really about sharing the resources. So the more women we have in small business, the better this world is going to be, the better the economy will be. And it's just something that I know personally all about. And it's something that I think I'll always be a serial entrepreneur just because it's where I feel the most fulfilled. And now I have an outlet to actually share every single experience that I've had. It's so funny. When I was 14, I had an idea or just a thought process that I was going to wear many different hats. And I knew that in my heart at 14. Like, you're going to do many different things in your life. And I don't think that...
It's come with a lot of support from your family, by the way.
My mom is great. She believes in whatever it is I put out there. She still thinks that Pieces is going to open again one day.
So you had a strong background.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt. But
no,
yeah.
It's okay. But none of my family are actually in business for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But then thinking about the history, you know, my grandfather had 13 kids and never worked a job a day in his life. He was a serial entrepreneur. He did everything from a hot dog truck to being a mechanic to being a carpenter. But he provided for his family. And, you know, he wore many different hats. And of course, when you're young, you don't think about that. But in retrospect, I know now where that spirit comes from.
So here's the thing, you know, what's so interesting being the year that it is, I can't believe we're still talking about this, that, you know, making it in a man's world is no easy feat for women.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you, is it more difficult for African-American women? Or are we all in this together as broads?
I think we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. We're totally all in this together. I do think being an African-American does play another...
adds another dimension.
Adds a completely different dimension to it. However, the conversation is still at the root the same. And I think, you know, there may be more disadvantages, but then there may be more advantages as well because of the fact that you're an African American. Like, there are more grants for women who are minority versus just women. It depends on how you see it. Do you see it half full, the glass half full, or do you see it half empty is kind of how I see it.
And the women who attend Ladies Who Lunch seminars come from all different walks of life, white, African-American, mm-hmm. all
absolutely.
Different avenues.
Absolutely. We want the diversity because that builds the conversation, and we encourage the diversity. And, you know, there are some women that still work every day and haven't left their jobs and don't know when they're going to leave their jobs, but they want to be in the room because they want to start to have these conversations. There are women who are now on their second and third businesses. I mean, the diversity in terms of experience is also present in the room as well.
So these are women who don't work for somebody else?
It's a combination. It's a combination. You know, we want to encourage those women who haven't taken the leap yet to leave their jobs because they like that security, mm-hmm. you know.
Not everybody can start their own business.
And not everyone. Right. Well,
and I would also assume that it runs the age gamut.
Oh, yeah.
That must be the most exciting thing.
It really is. I mean, I have women that are 65 watching what I'm doing. I mean, and of course, a woman that's 65 has pretty much led a great life and, you know, maybe living her second life or maybe retired at this point mm-hmm. or whatever. But to be watching me and what I'm doing and following what it is that we're trying to do with Ladies Who Lunch is incredible. I mean, our demographic is from about 19 to 65. Our larger demographic is about 35 to 55.
Now, what's in store for Ladies Who Lunch coming up?
Okay.
You're going to keep those same four cities? You're going to expand to other cities? I mean, that in and of itself must take up a lot of your time planning these things.
So, of course, when I these visions, right? You have these ideas.
Yeah,
and
maybe you shouldn't sleep or something.
You don't think about the work. I mean, I am so incredibly fortunate because I have this amazing board of women that are spending their own money just to support me, just to be there, just to help me execute. And it's pretty much a blessing. So for 2014, we want to elevate it a little. We actually want it to be a weekend retreat, mind, body, and spirit. And we want to address the larger part of what keeps us from actually pursuing our dreams. And so, you know, obviously that's mind, body, and spirit. You know, those three components are huge. And when you really sit down and you think about why is it that you are making the decision to not go after your dreams, you only live one life. And so we are actually launching the first Ladies Who Lunch retreat. And I'm really excited about that. It is a ton of work, a ton of planning. We are currently looking for sponsorship because I have funded every Ladies Who Lunch personally.
What does that mean? what does that mean?
Well, you know, it's a ticketed event. Which,
right. I have to pay.
Right. Which pays for the food.
Right.
The venue is not included in that ticket price. So the venue is at, because it's very expensive to do sit-down luncheons. It's like you're planning a mini reception, wedding reception.
Sure.
And we all know how expensive
those
can be.
You have staff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have believed in this so much that the funding is really coming out of my pocket. And I'm going to continue to do that, obviously. But, you know, going into 2014 with doing a weekend retreat, there's a ton of other expenses that go into it that I can't personally afford to invest in.
You'll have to ask
in.
Your guests.
No? Well, yeah, we
or
are.
Or get grants.
Well, that's
grants.
What we're doing. That's what we're doing. So we're in the process of trying to secure some grants. We've had some amazing sponsors that have been interested, so we're continuing those conversations. And hopefully for 2014, we'll be sponsored, where we don't have to think about the financial aspect of it, and we
sure.
can just focus on the mission.
So you'd like to do one big weekend in the year and then maybe some more lunches?
Yes, I'm going to anniversary D.C. We'll probably anniversary New York. We're still on the fence about that because where we want to do the retreat is pretty close in proximity to New York. And we've been asked to do Minneapolis. We've been asked to do Detroit, believe it or not.
Oh, and poor Detroit.
I know. Mm-hmm. And those are cities that, you know, I haven't been fortunate enough to visit. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the message that we're coming with can uplift so many
Absolutely.
Spirits.
Absolutely.
So we're actually considering doing those markets as well.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. So before we go, mm-hmm. tell people where they can get your clothes, and who are you designing for? I didn't even ask you that. Who does Ashton speak to?
Well, I think there's something in the line for everyone. Ashton really is about a woman who likes comfort, but also likes to look good. Not a woman that doesn't like to stand out, though, because, you know, the pieces are definitely stand out. You will be noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for good reason. I work in all comfortable fabrics, so you'll never feel uncomfortable in any of our pieces. And the line is available at ashtononline.com. It's ashtyn online.com.
Fabulous. So I could fit into...
Absolutely.
I saw some of your peekaboo dresses. I don't know. maybe my daughter-in-law. Well, Leticia, we could go on forever,
Absolutely. But
it was terrific to meet you. And really, you are inspirational and inspiring and relatable. And so I think you and I have a lot in common
here. Absolutely, Sandy. I'd love to get you on a panel one day for Ladies Who Lunch.
I would love to be there. And get me to the one with the spa.
Yes, we all need the spa, right? A great massage never hurt anyone.
It never hurt anybody. It's right. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. And if you'd like to reach the 51%, contact us at advertising@51%conversations.com. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.